Welcome, all you sinners and sodomites, to episode 34 of Bible Stories for Atheists. I am Josh.
I'm Linz.
And we are your guides to the awe-inspiringly artificial stories, literally, littering the Bible. We're not actually reading from the Bible this week.
No.
We're doing some reactions.
Yes, to some people who are, modern-day proselytizers?
I'm calling this a crazy Christian video reaction series thing. It's a crazy Christian videos.
Okay.
I probably should have thought this through before just saying it.
Well, you got to make sure you put like 10 unrelated emojis and a bunch of exclamation points after it.
In the podcast?
Yeah. Figure that out.
Okay.
All right.
So I don't know what you're listening to right now, but that's what I came up with.
Yeah, we deep dive into some more crazy than other videos that people have put out to try and help other people understand the Bible or how to live or how they used to live, I don't know, 5,000 years ago or something. Yeah. Not that long. 2,000 years ago or something.
We go through a video that Tim Mackey did of the Bible Project. He talks about the nature of heaven and earth, his idea about the nature of heaven and earth.
It's a real comic book ride.
Yeah, it is. Girl Defined, which is a, let's call it a ministry.
A ministry.
Yeah, that seems to be a for-profit ministry. They talking about masturbation. And I'm sure you can tell where they go with that. Let's just say some interesting beliefs.
Yes.
And you can see what that is when we get to it.
Well, you can hear it.
You can see it if you
close your eyes real hard.
LSD for listening to this, you know. Not that we suggest you should, but God, it's a better way of listening to this. So strap in, strap on for episode 34. How to do a podcast in a God-honoring way.
Whoa, dude. God wants you to speak to all nations for him?
Yeah, just for him. Just for him.
I really wish you would have done more than 3 days. Whatever it was in here. Oh, here's more.
What do you think this podcast is all about?
Some of these other ones are church ones too. Dear God, dear Daddy?
Dear Daddy.
What it says.
Yeah.
You are El Shaddai.
El Shaddai.
Abba, Papa.
Yeah.
I love you. You have touched my life in unbelievable ways. Praise you, Almighty. I wrote a poem about Columbine last night. You have begun to give me amazing insight into it. Praise your name.
God, that means I was 14 when I was writing that.
It was in 2000.
Oh, so I was
10/1/2000. So you waited a whole year.
I was 15.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lord, I love
it. It was highly impactful.
Yeah.
Columbine.
Lord, I love writing you like this. Please help me to do it for you. Please help me to do it for your glory, not mine. Praise. Please, God bless the Columbine kids. Bring peace to their parents. Praise and glory to you, Almighty El Shaddai. Good Lord. Your son and disciple, spelled incorrectly. No. And servant. This says Dickaple.
Dickaple?
It's D-I-C-I-P-L-E. Oh. Dickapole.
I thought you meant like that's how I was signing off. Dickapole.
The name is...
Your son, Dickapole.
It's, well, it's interesting because I think these pages clearly came before these ones did.
Yeah.
So where do I start?
You want to explain to the folks? Oh, we're looking.
I thought it was just... Good. So, all right. So I was looking for something the other day, and we have just, as everyone does, like just mountains of boxes in our basement that has shit in it. And they came across this little red book that written on the cover of it says God's property. So I was like, oh, God left his book here.
Which, by the way, so it's a red hardcover journal.
Yes.
And it was written in like, with like
a blue, pencil.
Was it a pencil or was it a ballpoint pen?
The cover is definitely pencil.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. If you, I could lick it and erase it.
Okay.
If I wanted to. And, but that's on the one side because it looks like you tried to start writing on half of it and then stopped for a good long while because the last one in here, well, not that long. The last one here is 10-1
of 2000.
Of 2000.
Yeah.
Started on 3699, but some of this is not related to your Christianity. Some of it is obsession over a girl.
Yeah.
So we're gonna skip over those meaty bits.
Yeah.
And from time to time come back to Josh's former life as a hardcore Christian.
Yeah.
Wow. It's crazy stuff, man. So I guess you guys heard what I already read and we can kind of just leave it at that today, I guess, unless you want me
I think that actually is going to set up something good later in the episode. So that sets, it's the amuse-bouche, if you will.
Amuse-bouche.
For this episode.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you got a little tasty taste. More to come in the future. Because it's funny because I said to Josh, I'm introducing a new segment, which is Lindsay reads Josh's most inner private thoughts. Teenage Josh's most inner private thoughts. And Josh straight up was like, give me that book. This is never happening. And then just yesterday he's like, all right, maybe you can do it.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know how much material we're going to have for this episode. So I'm that desperate.
I think it's interesting to like go back and read what you were thinking way back then.
Yeah.
And how different it is from now, but also like make people really understand that yes, we've talked about you being all in, but like you were writing letters to God, like
you're and getting responses.
Yes. Apparently that's you thought you were.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
It's tough to go back to it, especially just trying to read my old handwriting.
Oh my God, it's terrible.
Yeah.
You terrible handwriting.
I did cursive.
Oh, why?
Yeah.
People with terrible handwriting should never use cursive.
So let's start.
From the beginning.
Let me start by introducing you to Tim Mackey.
Hi, I don't know you. I'm sure you're a really nice person.
Tim Mackey is what I would call a hipster Christian.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. He's from Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
Converted to Christianity when he was 20 at Skate Church.
Oh, God. Skate Church.
Skate Church. And I'm guessing he prays every day that we will get a praise and worship album from Weezer. Tim founded a YouTube channel called Bible Project, where they put out animated videos that summarize books of the Bible. And I actually used that for the Book of Acts to kind of get an overview ahead of time. Like, all right, how could we break this up and stuff like that? And it was helpful. So thanks, Tim. you're helping us out.
Great.
Yeah. Today we're watching a video that he made called Heaven and Earth, which is basically a short sermon on what he thinks the nature of heaven and earth is.
Okay.
And we start with the conceit that there is a God space, aka heaven.
Okay.
And an earth space.
That's it? Just those two things?
Yeah, aka earth. There is technically also hell.
Space.
Interestingly, he never talks about space. There's just heaven space and earth space.
Okay. And hell space.
There is hell space, but that's, we'll get to that later. He says that it's impossible. It's impossible for us to conceive of God's space, and that space is very different from our space.
They're different in their nature, but here's what's really interesting is that in the Bible, these are not always separate spaces. So think of heaven and earth as like different dimensions that can overlap in the same exact space.
They overlap.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then like random stairways show up. Is that what he's talking about?
Random stairways. Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. No, but that's funny. Yeah. The stairway to heaven that Jacob ran into,
right,
or ladder, depending on the translation.
Right.
Yeah.
The stairway up into heaven.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess maybe he would consider that the heaven space.
Like the touching. Bleed over. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But but he's saying that the story of the Bible, like the overall story of the Bible, mm-hmm, is a story about how the heaven dimension and the earth dimension were at once united or overlapping and were driven apart. And that God is bringing them together again. That's the story of the Bible. God bringing those two dimensions together again.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. Sounds like a comic book plot, but yeah.
This is what the Bible's description of the Garden of Eden is all about. It's a place where God and humanity dwelt together perfectly, no separation, and humans then partner with God in building a flourishing, beautiful world and so on.
But then Adam and Eve sin. Well, as Paul would put it,
Eve sinned. Yeah.
So we humans, we sin because apparently we wanted God out of our world. I don't know why, but apparently that's his idea.
That's his theory. But wait a minute. Yeah. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
On the first day, God created what?
On the first day? Mm-hmm. I think it was light.
Okay.
He said, let there be light. I think it was the first day.
And on the second day, he created.
I mean, I don't know off the top of my head. I can pull it up.
He created all of these things.
Yeah.
As separate things. Like he created people and animals and the earth.
Oh, you're talking about the difference between heaven and earth.
Yeah, because he's saying that heaven and the Garden of Eden were the same thing.
Yeah, that you're totally right. That's what it sounds like he's saying. Is
right.
That, but he would probably say that, well, they weren't the same thing. That's just where heaven and earth were overlapping each other, you know? And so therefore it doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah.
Right. I know what you mean. They're talked about as completely separate things.
Right.
Yeah.
Why would God want his heaven to overlap with fucking earth anyway?
I know. We didn't even have bacon for a long time. So the idea is that it's separated because Adam and Eve sinned. We sinned. Humans sinned. We wanted God to be
separate.
Whoa. Yeah.
They sinned. That doesn't mean all of us sinned.
Yeah. we all sin, and that's God, us not wanting God in our world. So that's what causes the interdimensional divergence between heaven and earth, right? Anyway, of course, the story of Adam and Eve, the first man and the first woman in the Garden of Eden with all the animals created exactly as we see them today. If all of that is just a parable, if physicists are right, the universe is 13.8 billion years old and Darwin was right and life evolved over billions of years and there was no first man or first woman, if it's all just literature and it's not literal, then none of it makes any sense.
Well, yeah.
Because then we never had, without a first man or a first woman, we never had a time when heaven and earth were overlapping or
right,
touching or whatever.
Yeah.
This is, yeah. You have to be a creationist to buy into this, is basically what
I'm
saying.
I know,
and if most folks I have no idea with Tim Mackey, but most folks in that realm.
Clearly not, because it just by saying that Adam and Eve were the first people.
Yeah.
Makes you a creationist.
Right. It's like, yeah, no, there was no first. But let's pretend this does make sense.
Okay.
What's up? Yeah. What's up with heaven and earth overlapping?
This is where we have to start talking about temples. Because in the biblical world, you experience God's presence by going to a temple. That's where heaven and earth overlap.
I like it, the little pop.
I know. Overlap.
I don't think I can do it that well.
Overlap.
Yeah. There's this book called A History of God by Karen Armstrong. I'm pretty sure this is where I read this. She talked about how this is what temples were for cultures older than Judaism, even, that temples were thought to be reflections of the realm of the gods here on earth, mm-hmm. right? Unfortunately, no information was ever given about how the architects got the blueprints to these heaven buildings.
God, you know? Divine.
Right. But that's the role that they served. They were that connection between them. So this isn't even like a new idea.
Right.
You know, in Judaism, though, they did build a temple that at the middle of it had the Holy of Holies. It's what it was called, this chamber sort of.
Are you talking about the one that God told Moses to build? You know about that temple?
The one he told Moses to build was a tabernacle, which it was used as a temple.
Okay.
That was like, but it was a movable one. It was a tent. And then eventually Solomon, David's son, King David's son, ended up building an actual temple.
And they had the holiest of holies at the center, which is?
It's a place where priests would go to be in the presence of God themselves, right?
Yeah.
So this would be a place where God's space would transcendentally mingle with earth space in the holiest of holies.
Okay.
There's a problem, though. How could you have perfect, amazing God space touch dirty, old, naughty earth space, right?
Sounds like the start to a rated X movie.
Yeah.
The temple also creates a problem. So God's space is full of his presence and goodness and justice and beauty, but human space is full of sin and injustice and the ugliness that results. This was resolved through animal sacrifice.
Now, this might not make
any sense whatsoever.
A lot of sense to most rational people. You might be thinking, how the fuck does killing an animal generate the 1.21 gigawatts of cosmic syncopation needed to put heaven and earth dimensions back into alignment? Well, Tim gives a scientific breakdown of how this works.
Animal sacrifices, somehow they absorb the sin when the animal dies in your place. And it creates a clean space, so to speak, where you are now free to enter into the temple and be in God's presence.
The goats are sin sponges.
There are times where I wish that this was less of a audio-only feature and had video, because I don't have words to respond to this, just faces that I'm making. It of complete just...
It's just kind of giving up. Is kind of how I would describe your look after that.
I mean,
kind of like, ugh.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So like, all right, let's do the exercise, right?
Yeah.
So animals, I guess, are without sin. Is that the point? And killing them absorbs
You're already doing a better job of explaining this than I've ever heard.
So killing them absorbs, but that's where I lose, like, how? Why? Yeah. Why does killing an animal absorb your sin or the sins of just the area where the God's space
is? Yeah, it's very local.
Yeah.
It's very local.
Yeah, it creates like a pocket dimension.
Yeah.
Spilling the blood of an animal.
It creates a clean space. And you're kind of hitting on this because it just provides a solution really for the Israelites. And specifically, it provides a solution for the Israelites living in Jerusalem back when they had a temple.
Right.
In order to make the heaven dimension astro-quantize with the dimension across the whole world, we need another solution. And can you guess what that solution is?
Jesus.
It's Jesus.
Yeah!
In the Gospel of John, we hear this claim that God became human in Jesus and made his dwelling among us. Now, this word dwelling is really curious. It means he set up a tabernacle among us. And so what John is claiming right here is that Jesus is a temple. He is now the place where heaven and earth overlap.
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously he is. His DNA is half God, half human.
Right, yeah.
Really?
His DNA.
Yeah, yeah, it's DNA.
Let's not get all scientific about this.
But, like, first of all...
I'm sorry, I'm still wrapping my head around the idea of God having DNA.
You need DNA to create a human.
Yeah, yeah.
You need two sets of DNA.
You need that.
It's just, you need it.
Do you think God's DNA is just like one? Like that's like is the equivalent of having like an ID, an employee ID number that's just one.
One, yeah. You know? It's straight. It's not even a helix.
Right.
But what I don't understand is why this exercise, all, any of these exercises need to happen. Couldn't the answer just be, well, he's fucking God. If he wants to talk to you, he just can.
Yeah.
He did like, the Moses all the time.
Yeah. Why is it? Yeah. He appeared on the top of Mount Sinai without the need of any sacrifices. And why is it that God is incapable of doing things, which they constantly are saying that he is?
Right.
Without even realizing they say that, they do that. My question when I got to this was actually, it's something I think every single Christian should ask themselves. Why is it that God didn't implement this solution, Jesus,
right away?
Originally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of doing a temple at all, you know, why didn't God just send Jesus or send a Messiah, whatever you want to call it, after the first sin?
Oh, yeah.
And stomp it out of the root.
He made us too stupid. He thought we were going to figure something out is the only thing I can think of, right? I'm just thinking of, I'm thinking of this from like a parental side, right?
But that's limited information which God shouldn't have.
Right. But in my head, it's like he made Adam and Eve. They done fucked up. They ate from the tree of knowledge, but they didn't get any actual more knowledge, right? They just learned how to fuck.
They learned that they were naked.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I don't know if maybe God was expecting humans to come to some sort of thing on their own. And then he realized that it was not working out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know. That's the thing though, is like, if God is all knowing, all powerful and all good,
right?
What sense does it make that that God didn't immediately pull the Messiah card when the first sin happened? Then there would be no need to kill everybody in a flood.
Right.
You know, everyone could have been getting saved this entire time since the beginning of time, 6,000 years ago. Mm. So Jesus is here and
he's a human tabernacle.
But he's here on earth.
Like Danny the Street.
Yeah.
And
he runs around curing people of diseases and forgiving their sins and everything, right?
He's basically creating little pockets of heaven. And he even told his followers to pray regularly that God's kingdom come and that his will be done here on earth, just as it is in heaven.
And right there is a distinction
between
heaven and earth.
Yeah.
That his will be done on earth as it is done in heaven, not that earth be made into heaven.
Yeah. And I'm just loving the idea of Jesus walking around leaving little pockets of heaven everywhere.
Like he's crop dusting.
Like a spark cloud.
He's crop dusting. Does it smell like spring air?
What's that smell? It's just a piece of heaven. You're welcome.
But Jesus isn't just the temple. He was also called the Lamb of God by the guy that ate locusts and honey in the desert, right?
Yep.
Which means he's also the sacrifice you make at the temple.
So the cross is now the place where Jesus absorbs sin to create a clean space that is not limited like animal sacrifices. Jesus' sacrifice has the power to keep spreading and spreading and reuniting more and more of heaven on earth.
Now we have cross sponges instead of goat sponges.
Oh, no. It's a Jesus sponge.
Yeah.
He's the sponge.
And these sponges are much more portable and ultra absorbent.
Well, no. They cut open Jesus and light came out of him. And that is what cured everybody of their sin.
Is that what it is?
That's what I pictured when he started talking about
it. Okay.
Because he was like... He said that Jesus was the sacrifice to absorb the sin, but not just in a small area.
Right.
Like animals, but everywhere. So I just picture like a beam coming out of him like he's something from the X-Men. And whoever gets into the beam is like, oh, I feel sin free.
Also, what's that smell? This leads to another question of like, what happens when we die, right? Does this mean that we don't actually go to heaven since, ooh, heaven is a place on earth?
A few times in the New Testament, we learn that Christians will be with Jesus in heaven after they die, but that is not the focus of the Bible story.
So we have not seen a single thing that Jesus ever said to suggest people go to heaven when they die.
What is this guy's accent?
Portland?
No. It sounds like he's trying to do like a half British accent sometimes. So anyway.
So we have not seen a single place that in when we read through the Gospels where Jesus said anything to suggest people go to heaven when they die.
Yes.
Except maybe for the 12 disciples, including Judas, where he said
who are going to sit
thing.
Next to God.
Yeah, they were going to be on the 12 thrones in heaven. Or it might have even been just the kingdom of God, which...
Right.
I imagine the paradise earth would have been too, part of that kingdom. He said that the believers will be resurrected after judgment day into a paradise, which is supposed to be a transformed earth, not heaven. Heaven is a different place. So what is going to happen when God does overlap heaven and earth?
In the book of Revelation, we get this beautiful image of the Garden of Eden, now in the form of a city, coming to end the age of sin and death by redeeming all of human history in a renewed creation. And God's space and human space completely overlap once again.
I haven't read Revelation in a while, but I might be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure that the city he's talking about is heaven. Like, it's just heaven appears as a city in the book of Revelation. It's so fucking weird because John, who in theory is the person writing the book of Revelation, literally has to measure heaven, like measure how big heaven is for some fucking reason. I don't know.
Weird.
Yeah, but like he gives specific units of measurement for how big heaven is. And maybe that's why they can only fit in like 100,000 people.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful image, apparently, of heaven coming and overlapping and destroying
everything that exists
on Earth.
Everything
that exists on Earth.
Yeah.
How beautiful.
And you can only fit one city's worth of people in it. Sounds about right.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole thing is fucking weird. The whole thing.
Oh, shit. Yeah. It makes me, you know what I thought of when you were talking is, do you remember in Ms. Marvel where the djinn, like they were trying to get their city to come and take over Earth?
Yeah.
And it would have destroyed Earth.
That's basically it.
And it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Marvel might be onto something there.
You guys, if you want a visual representation of what this guy is talking about, just watch Ms. Marvel. It's a great story. You'll love it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What if in the beginning, heaven and Earth were different dimensions?
Oh,
occupying the same space,
right.
And then we sinned and the dimensions split up and maybe Jesus makes a little piece of heaven and earth fuse together whenever someone stops being a dick. Or maybe what? Started exhaling.
Oh my
fake
god!
Smoke.
I really wish everyone would have just been able to see that because I'm watching Josh pull to fake smoke in his chest and then blow it out the side of his mouth so as not to do it in the microphone.
Yeah, I don't want to. It was really so I didn't blow it in your face because that would be rude. So anyway, it's totally a stoner thought. The whole thing is a stoner theory.
I mean, the whole Bible is a stoner theory.
Yeah. I also watched a 45-minute sermon that Tim did where he gave a much more in-depth breakdown of this theory. And if I were to sum up his beliefs on this, it would be this. By Jesus changing how you behave, you make the world less like hell and more like heaven. And that's all God wants, is to make the world less like hell and more like heaven. Pride, lust, anger, greed, these are all pieces of hell. And that creates evil in the world, right? And then Jesus gets rid of those. Of course, the big problem with this is it comes down to deciding who are quote unquote true Christians, mm-hmm. right? Which we've talked about before, that when they were the early church trying to figure out, do you need to get yourself circumcised if you become a Christian right. or not and stuff like that? What are true Christians and what aren't true Christians? And the reason why it comes down to this is because there's a lot of people who are Christian who are very prideful mm-hmm. and are very lustful and mm-hmm. angry and mm-hmm. greedy. These are people who truly believe that they are Christians, but they are pretty horrible people, you know, that the rest of us have to deal with, right? So are those people not true Christians? No. Why is Jesus incapable of transforming those people for some reason, you know?
Yeah.
So this is where the belief kind of breaks down. Also, it's just not biblical.
No.
Like, it doesn't ring true with the Bible.
Well, and can we also talk about how saying things like, I mean, I'll give you greed, right? We could all do without a little bit, all the greed. But yeah. I think it's important to call out that when Christians call things like anger or pride or lust sins, you're creating shame.
Right.
And it's completely natural to be angry. And it's actually really important for people to like feel their feelings and let them out.
You're talking in absolutes when you do that.
Yeah.
And it's not absolutely wrong to be angry. There's times where it is justifiable to be angry.
And it's fine to have pride, I think. I 100% think it's fine to be lustful.
Right.
It's completely ridiculous to create an environment where natural human feelings are made into things that create shame. And that is one of my biggest problems with Christianity, is the creation of shame that goes along with almost all of it.
Right.
Including that. So this guy's walking around saying like, oh, we want earth to be more like heaven, which means we all have to be less angry and less full of pride and less lustful. Or you could just teach people how to manage their feelings in an appropriate way and the world would be a better place.
Right. Yeah.
A lot less priests touching kids, that's for sure.
Yeah. Now, these beliefs that Tim are peddling are largely harmless, right? Like, they're not directing you to harmful behavior or anything. Mm. But I don't think people like Tim Mackey actually believe in Christianity. They don't act like it's real. Like they use these easy outs, like it was a different culture back then and everything, to avoid having to deal with the problematic tenets of their beliefs, as they should. You shouldn't let your religion make you racist or sexist.
Right.
You have to avoid that. But I think they're hiding from a truth that's in the back of their minds, which is that it's not real. You know, none of this is actually real. How does a perfect God write an imperfect message? Mm-hmm. And by participating in all this, they provide validation and cover for all of those shitty Christians who push harmful beliefs on people. Christians, like our next subject.
Oh.
If you haven't heard of Girl Defined.
Oh, God.
They're what I would call influencer Christians. Oh. So we had hipster Christians. Now we're going to talk about influencer Christians. It's a website, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, book, newsletter, podcast, and paid mentorship course, quote unquote, ministry. Mm. You know, one of those ministries for profit. Girl Defined was started by two sisters from San Antonio, Texas, Bethany Beal and Kristen Clark. That's right. They both married into alliterative names. The first time I think we heard about them was a couple years ago when we were watching the Trixie Mattel video.
Yes.
They had put out a video.
How to wear makeup in a godly way.
In a God-honoring way.
Yeah.
This is a phrase that they really like, God-honoring. And world-famous drag queen Trixie Mattel did a hilarious reaction video to that went viral.
So the verse that we've really looked at and that we're going to look at today really quickly
comes
to 1 Timothy 2, 9 through 10. And this is something I'm sure you've all heard, but just listen
of
up.
Of course, I've heard it.
Really interesting. It says, likewise also that women should adorn themselves in respectable apparel with modesty and self-control, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or...
Not with braided hair? These whores have two braids in their hair. Make it make sense. What's not clicking? What's not clicking? There is a thing where people take what they want from the Bible and then they stick to the rules in some areas and then interpret in others. If you're going to wear braids, you can let gay people get married, bitch.
Fucking, yep.
Yep. Trixie.
Preach it, Trixie.
Yeah, Trixie, like, watching those videos, I realize she's a lot smarter than she lets on.
Listen, There's a lot of really smart drag queens out there.
Yeah.
They would put us all to shame. There's a lot of dumb ones too.
But yeah, there are.
they're humans.
Yeah, they're people. And as we record this, Trixie actually just put out another video a few days ago where with a second reaction to one of the girl defined videos where they were like saying that drag queens
were ruining America
or something.
Yeah.
I should also point out though that from that clip, the verse that they were referencing comes right before the verse we talked about in the last episode, the one that says, "A woman should learn in quietness and full submission. I do not permit a woman to teach or to assume authority over a man. She must be quiet."
Oh, well, these bitches are not being quiet.
No, no. But they're not teaching men, which I think is why they market their shit exclusively to girls.
Is that what it is?
I think so. I bet, because they clearly believe in this verse. That's the thing. Mm. These are women who clearly believe in this.
Yeah. Well.
Or at least they say they do. They were wearing braided hair like trollops.
Yeah, and who the fuck... trollops. And who the fuck knows what they really do in their actual lives?
No. So you go on their website and it's fucking nuts. It's like I said, there's paid mentorship courses. There's... I downloaded a guide for 5 ways to stay pure or whatever the fuck. And it was behind a
paywall.
It wasn't a paywall. It was gated content though, where like I had to give it my email address, a fake email address. I gave them yours.
And
in order to download the thing. But so then they get you into the newsletter and all that stuff. It's all based around what's really basic marketing techniques.
Sure.
But like they've really gone into it.
Yeah.
Like you can tell this is a money making machine for them.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
I feel like I'm about to get real angry.
Oh.
Great.
Yeah. I mean, it could be worse. There are probably videos I could have selected that were way worse that would have gotten you way more riled up. But anyway, the video we're going to be looking at today is just from one of the sisters, Kristen.
The less attractive one?
No.
Oh, she's the pretty one?
Yeah.
There is a dynamic between these two.
Yeah,
one of them is prettier than the other.
Yeah. Anyway, so, and this one is all about masturbation.
Oh, no.
Yeah. If her audio sounds a little weird, it's because she filmed this in her car for some reason. Sorry, I'm guessing it's actually her husband's car. Jesus loves synergy. So you need the YouTube video to tie into the podcast.
But it's a follow-up on the podcast episode I did where I took a deep dive, episode 90, talking all about masturbation and the Christian woman's struggle to find freedom.
And you have to tie in the Instagram.
Posted a story on Instagram a day or two ago, and I asked you guys, I said, hey, you know, have you listened to the episode? If not, listen to it. Give me your follow-up questions.
And of course, the book.
In Sex, Purity, and the Longings of a Girl's Heart, the book that Bethany and I wrote, I take a deep, 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 deep dive, not just into masturbation, but erotica, pornography, fantasies, lust, like sexual struggles in the mind, secret sins, like dealing with all of that.
All within the first 4 minutes of this video.
Secret sins.
Secret sins. So the first question she tackled was, is masturbation a sin if you don't have sexual thoughts while doing it? By the way, totally something I thought about when I was like a teenager.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Most of this stuff, it's really weird going through this because most of the stuff is shit I was thinking about back when I was a teenager.
I have yet to meet a person who is able to consistently masturbate without a single sexual thought entering their mind.
My dad can't do it. My mom can't do it. My sister can't do it. My father-in-law can't do it. My mother-in-law can't do it. None of my grandpas or grandmas can do it.
Do you think she starts off with that question when meeting new people? Right. Hi, I'm Kristen. Do you think about sexual thoughts when you masturbate?
Yeah.
No?
I have yet to meet anybody. Yes?
You don't want to tell me because it's personal? Oh, okay. Right. I'll take that as like a, of course I do.
Here's what I would say is that God designed sex to be an act between a husband and a wife in the context of marriage, in the covenant of marriage.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
What bullshit, God? Okay, listen, tell that to the people in your fucking book who had sex with like their daughters and had 20 wives and all that bullshit.
Oh, we're getting to that. Yeah.
We come up with all these reasons, but what we fail to grasp, what we forget is that in the Bible, from Genesis to Revelation, never do we see any sexual acts, any sexual pleasure, any sexual desire being fulfilled in a God-honoring way outside of marriage. We just don't see that.
Yeah, if you choose not to look for it. She needs to listen to the first few episodes of our podcast because Jacob couldn't get one of his wives pregnant.
Right.
So she had him fuck a slave.
Right.
So that she could take the kid mm-hmm. for herself. Then Jacob's son, Judah, marries his first son off to some woman named Tamar. You remember that mm-hmm. story. His son dies. So he marries the second son off to Tamar. He spills his seed instead of coming inside of her. So God kills him.
Yep.
Hence the one Bible verse about this.
Yeah.
Shit. And then Judah's wife dies and Tamar dresses up as a prostitute to right. get Judah to have sex with her.
Yep.
She ends up getting pregnant. And one of the kids is Jesus's ancestor.
Oh, right.
Literally an ancestor of Jesus.
Yeah.
So read your Bible, Kristen.
Also, like, I hate it when they're like, it doesn't say it in the Bible. Listen, bitch, that the Bible, first of all, isn't in full. Like, they've pulled so much shit out of it. And it was written by...
They added so much shit yeah, to it over the years.
And it was written by men who were just trying to get something off the fucking ground and create a cult. So, yeah. Of course they don't have all of that shit in there.
Also, she calls it God on her, like, she says... In a God-honoring way, which she loves Listen. This phrase. But that phrase doesn't actually make any sense. It's a subjective phrase.
Yeah.
Right? You could use it however is convenient in a moment.
I think if you want to honor God during sex, you have the best orgasm of your life.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that's the only way to do it. And yell his name a couple times.
Yeah. Yeah. Just throw a few, gods out.
Yeah. Yeah. That way you're honoring him.
Yeah.
Whilst you're having an orgasm.
Right.
Even if you are able to masturbate and you do not believe there's any lustful thoughts happening in your heart or your mind, I would say it is still a counterfeit version of God's design for sexuality because it falls outside of that covenant of marriage where we are serving, giving, pouring, loving another, celebrating a covenant. There is no covenant to celebrate when you're by yourself. There is no serving except serving yourself. And there is no pouring out. It's just very much about your pleasure, your desires. It's all about you.
Oh, bitch. There is pouring out.
Why is that a problem, though? Are you not allowed to ever have anything that you want to do, you know, like no. that you do for yourself?
No,
like,
it's all for God.
Yeah.
God's a needy bitch, according to these people. That's the fucked up Apparently. Part.
Yeah.
As he went, if you believe the stories, a really long time without us, and then all of a sudden he just needs all of our attention and love constantly.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Constantly from all of us. And the one thing that's going to piss him off is like, if you touch your dick.
She might as well be sitting down a 13-year-old girl and looking her straight in the eyes, telling her that the feelings she's having
is shameful.
Is shameful and yes. selfish.
Yes.
It's not just shameful. It's selfish. And then literally seconds later.
One of you asked, do you think it's wrong for everyone or a personal conviction issue? You know, I'm not going to put my convictions on anyone else, but what I see in scripture is what I just said.
I'm not going to put my convictions on anyone else until the end of the sentence, you perverted heathens.
But I know what it says in the Bible. I just said it. Except that you hand cherry picked a couple things to right. tie into what you wanted it to mean. And then you conveniently left out every single other piece of contradictory Bible that there is. Bitch. I'm so full of shame right now because I also have anger.
Is it because of all the pride?
Creating a hell on earth.
Yeah. I know. They're generating yes. more hell on earth.
They are yeah. in this room right now in my vagina.
That's what I want everyone to think about is not just, is this right or wrong, but really what's God's greater plan and purpose and intent? And am I pursuing it and honoring it and upholding it in a way that truly reflects God's heart for sex?
God's heart for sex.
Yeah.
God's
yeah.
got a heart for sex.
I she seems to think so. Yes. And I kind of came back to like, you think that God or the universe or whatever maybe their purpose for sex was just making it feel good so we would actually do it.
Well, that is the exact purpose for it.
Yeah, like maybe the only thing that actually matters is that we reproduce.
Right. I mean, we could stop now.
Yeah.
Now sex is
now it's fine. Yeah.
It's enough. We've reached enough.
Not according to some people. Not according to some people out there, though. Some people want us to keep factoring out some babies. Yeah. You
know? The sentence that she said didn't even make sense. It was just a bunch of buzzwords all strung together in a semi-coherent sentence.
Yeah. Clearly, God did not build us for self-control to the extent that she seems to think they wanted us to have. We're clearly not built for that.
No.
Next question is, what got you feeling convicted?
Yeah.
And of course, it starts with another podcast plug.
I share again my whole testimony, episode 90 of the Girl Defined Show.
Yes. And then she goes on with this.
What got me convicted was that I didn't know for many years that I was masturbating. Like I was doing that, but I didn't know what it was called. Because for me, it was a struggle that began when I was really young.
Yeah.
What? All right. Just because your parents didn't teach you about fucking anything when you were younger.
Really goes to show they should.
Yeah, because it damages people when you don't.
Creates fucked up perceptions of sex.
I was masturbating and I didn't even know I was doing it. Well, yes, you did. And you loved it.
Right.
You loved it.
And also, it's like clearly you just didn't know what it was called.
Right.
Like, but you knew what you were doing.
Listen, bitch, you're not special. That happens to every single fucking person on the planet. Can we talk about how this is just everybody?
Right. Yeah.
She's not special.
No.
I just started to realize that I was not pursuing, that masturbation was not, honestly, just an authentic, genuine act of sexual pleasure being pursued in a biblical context. I knew it wasn't. I knew for me it was very selfish. It was all about my pleasure. It was about my desires and longings. For me, it was very lust fueled.
Like, seriously, why is this a sin?
And
what is it that God is trying to protect?
Well, so I have follow up questions for her because she's like, I realized that it sounds like she was saying she enjoyed it too much and she was spending too much time doing it and it was really interfering with her life. Like, how much were you doing it? And what age are we talking about? What age did you figure out it was a selfish, lustful act that wasn't in line with the Bible?
I think she talks about it a little bit more, like what age she was at. I think we get to the answer to that question.
Okay.
What is it that God is actually protecting you here? Like, she'll briefly talk about this a little bit later on, but what she never really addresses is, did all this masturbating somehow make her love her husband less now that she's married, you know?
Right.
What is the problem that's trying to be solved here?
Right.
The next question is, how do you not give in?
And I remember so many times, like, the urges can feel overwhelming.
And this is another thing that keeps pissing me off while I was watching this. She keeps acting like she never, quote unquote, struggles anymore. You know, like, she keeps saying, I remember this being so hard, or I remember having to deal with this and all that stuff. But she doesn't admit that she probably is still masturbating today.
Yeah.
You know, or at least she wants to, because marriage and having sex regularly doesn't stop that
from
being a thing that you want to do.
Well, you know? But also, like, listen, I'm a fan, but I never in my life was there ever a single moment, and it might be different for dudes, I don't know, where I was like, oh my God, I need to masturbate right now. If I don't do it, I'm gonna die. And that's what she makes it sound like. But that's what people who have shame about things feel like.
They feel like they have to do
it. Yeah, like the urge is so overwhelming because they know they're not supposed to. And I never felt like that ever.
Yeah.
And so never in my life have I ever been like, oh my gosh, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Must masturbate now. Never. Ever in a million years.
Well, you've also never met, fuck. What the fuck is Thor's name?
Oh, Chris Hemsworth?
Yeah, you never met Chris Hemsworth in person.
That's not an urge to masturbate.
You might if you met him in person.
That's an urge to do something else sexual.
Yeah.
Not by myself.
Well, assuming you're not able to pin him down.
That's terrible. I would never force myself upon Chris Hemsworth.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
Never. I'm serious. He would just find me so witty and charming that he'd want to.
You, that girl there. You're so witty and charming. Pin me down.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Have your way with me.
Thank you. Yes, now I do feel the urge to go masturbate. Thank you.
One of you said, you know, why does it feel so much worse afterwards? Like, I don't feel as convicted before I act, but then after.
Shame.
And I think it's just we can be so like set in our sin to where we might feel that conviction. But then are we really going to the Lord? Are we genuinely repenting?
So you can't just feel bad afterwards. You have to actually talk to the creator of the entire universe about masturbating.
Right.
In order to improve on it.
Hey, God, me again.
Yeah.
I know I said yesterday that was my last time, but I fucked up.
Yeah.
But then the kicker for me was when I brought my sin into the light, when I actually shared about my sin struggle with someone else. For me, it was my parents. I was like 15 or 16, and I shared the struggle. I said, can you please help me? Pray with me. And they did.
God, the look on Lindsay's face right there when she said that.
Oh, God. That's so creepy.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, our parents are the root of this problem, obviously.
Yeah. Not having a rational conversation with her
about sex
before she was 15 or 16.
Yeah. I'm all for open communication between children and parents about sex. Like, again, I don't think it's something that should be shameful. So I think people should be able to openly talk about
it. They clearly did not set her correct on this.
Well, no, obviously not.
Because she still is saying.
Well, they prayed with her, Josh.
They prayed with her. And also.
So that she could stop masturbating.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Instead of being like, yeah, that's normal, you know.
Right.
God doesn't care.
Right.
If you're
masturbating. No, they prayed and said, dear God, please help our daughter to stop touching her vagina and her clitoris.
Right.
Because she enjoys it too much and. It's making everybody uncomfortable.
It's making everybody uncomfortable. She's just doing it right in front of everybody.
Apparently, she just... It makes it sound like she was a crazy person.
Yeah.
She was literally just hands down her pants constantly.
Right.
Rubbing one out.
Yeah. I didn't even know I was doing it.
But inviting other believers, trusted Christian women or parents or someone that you can go to, that would be a good fit for this kind of like struggle. I'm thinking maybe like a mentor woman, a woman in your church, someone like that. Someone that you can go to where you can say, can you pray for me? Can you like, this is I get these urges all the time. Like, please, can you help me? Can you pray for me?
What would you say if somebody came to you saying,
will you pray for me to stop masturbating?
Yeah.
And I would say, no, fuck you. Go masturbate more.
Yeah. Just don't do it in front of me.
I mean, if you need to, I'm here for you, I guess.
Depends on who it is, I guess.
Yeah. Part of me is like, fine, talk about it with whomever you want to talk about. That does help with shame. But also, like, again, this isn't something to... You're creating shame. It's a weird shame tornado cycle that's happening. In one way, they're trying to cure the shame by being open and talking about it. But then it creates more shame because no one is saying...
It's okay.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't be so fucking hard on yourself. Yeah,
everybody does it.
Yeah.
You're normal.
Even if you thought it was
God doesn't care.
Even if you thought it was a sin, it's not that big of a fucking, it wouldn't be that big of a sin.
Right.
It'd be like fucking speeding or something.
And listen.
Just don't be so fucking hard on yourself.
Catholics think you can confess murder and go to heaven still. So I think you're fine to masturbate.
Everybody, all Christians think that.
Oh, well, then what the fuck's the problem?
I don't know. That's the thing. That's the thing. It's not even about sinning. It's about putting a burden on yourself.
Right.
It's the same thing as the dudes that would fucking whip themselves, the monks that would whip themselves, you know?
Right. Well, but I also want to point out that, like, if the one line in the Bible that talks about being anti-masturbation is the one where the dude spills a seed on the ground so God kills him.
Yeah. Onan.
Yeah. I mean, that's just dudes, though.
I know.
Women aren't spilling no seed.
There is no Bible verse saying it's wrong for women to masturbate.
I bet you if you asked the guys writing this Bible back in the day if it was okay for women to masturbate, they would probably say yes.
They would probably be like, women don't do that.
Or they would say yes, it's perfectly fine because we love it.
Yeah.
We love it.
Right. I mean, let's be honest, they were probably circumcising women.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. Ugh.
And having support, that is huge. And then another thing, this is also part of the journey toward freedom for me, was making radical changes. Like, you know, if you're chilling in your bed, binging a Netflix show that's extremely sexual, very provocative with nudity, all of these things, and then you're like, oh, like my urges are so strong, like I don't know what to do. Like, maybe stop throwing gasoline, you know, like on the fire.
On the fire. I guess if you're watching Bridgerton, maybe, and or 50 Shades of Grey or whatever, get white woman who don't watch porn horny these days.
Yeah.
Maybe, but I've never watched a television show and at the end of it been like, oh, that was hot. I have to go masturbate now.
Right.
Even if I was watching it in bed. And I know it's different. It's a little different for dudes, but like most of the dudes that have been open enough to talk about their sexual past and masturbation all grew up in shame-filled homes.
Yeah.
So of course you happen to see a tit on the TV. You get your little 14-year-old boner.
Oh, a tit.
You have to go take care of it, yeah. Right? So maybe
you have to go to the bathroom for about a half hour.
You have to go take a shower. This is your fifth shower today. I think you're clean.
No, I'm very dirty.
I mean, it's not like I grew up in a household where my parents were like, it's okay to masturbate, do whatever you want. It's just nobody
cared.
Yeah. I was never told it was bad. I was never told anything about it, really. I mean, my parents gave me a lot of books to read. That's where I learned about everything.
Are you talking about like sex ed books? Yeah. Really? Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. I don't think we've ever talked about that before.
Yeah. They just threw a shit ton of books at me and I read them all.
Okay. That's interesting. Instead of having a talk.
Yeah. So maybe it's just that I think of things in a clinical way because of that. I don't know. But
maybe that might be a really healthy way to do it.
Yeah.
What she does in this a lot is give out advice like this, where it's like, go for a run, block people on social media that make you struggle. You know,
so I would have to block Chris Hemsworth,
right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
Well, or you know, or some cute boy from high school or whatever. Not you doing that. Okay. I would certainly hope you don't have some cute boy from high school.
Right. I was like, gross.
Yeah, from some high school. That is a problem, Linz.
That's gross.
Yeah. But you know, like thinking of this from a teenage girl perspective, you know, like there might be some that you have to block so that you're not having a struggle. And she also suggests having a plan of action for when you get urges and stuff like that. And all of this is the exact same advice you would give drug addicts and alcohol addicts.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right? It's literally like, you know, you need a support system, people to hold you accountable. You need to cut out the triggers like shows or whatever. You need to remove people from your life that could drag you back into that destructive behavior, right? Mm. But all of that stuff is stuff that these women and Christians like them say about maintaining purity. It's great advice for somebody dealing with actual destructive addictions, but they still haven't shown what's destructive about masturbating.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're one of those, like, if you're a dude and you're like rubbing your dick raw.
Well, yeah.
Or if like,
if you're obsessive about it. Yeah. Again, right. You know, you go to an extreme with it, then sure, it's going to be a problem. But
imagine if no one had any sexual desires whatsoever, who would ever get married? Who would ever have sex? There would be no more children. There would be like, what would happen to the world? But our sexual urges, they push us toward something, and it shouldn't be toward sexual sin, but ultimately toward that beautiful marriage relationship.
If that's the goal, then it's clearly not working.
So do her and her husband only have sex to have children?
I don't know. I doubt it, though. I doubt that.
Well, then they're doing it wrong, too.
Yeah, they're doing it. Well, they're doing it, too, because it's a covenant. And she'll get into what this is supposed to be.
No. She just said that the purpose of the sex drive is to get people to procreate.
Yeah.
And therefore, that is the only purpose for sex.
Well, you're raised Catholic, so yes.
If you're having sex.
Yeah.
And your intention is not to get pregnant.
But to have an orgasm.
But to have an orgasm.
Yeah.
Then you are not honoring God.
Yeah. I mean, your interpretation of that is just as valid as hers.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not my actual interpretation. I don't give a fuck. Fuck who you want to fuck.
Right. Clearly, this is not working. Right. No. Clearly, this the system isn't working. And I keep thinking, like, I don't know how many times people like this have to say that God is doing a bad job before they realize that God is doing a bad job. Mm-hmm. If this was what God's goal was, then he clearly did it wrong. So either that's not God's goal or God doesn't exist at all. Anyway, how does masturbation affect marriage?
My struggle with masturbation prior to marriage impacted my relationship with my husband, our intimacy, because my body was so trained to respond to stimulation based on masturbation that when my husband, when we were having sex, when we are having sex, that I had early on in our marriage, I had to really almost like retrain my body to respond to my husband and not to respond to the way that I had grown used to experiencing an orgasm.
Yeah, the right way and the wrong way. Her way is the right way. His way is clearly the wrong way.
Yeah.
He's doing it wrong, or he'll dick.
Or, fucking women need to rub one out while you're having sex too,
I don't want to get into the technicality of it, but yeah. If you research it, there are sex positions that are better for women because of that exact reason.
Right. To stimulate the clitoris.
Right.
Right. Yeah, there are certain positions that are better for it than others. Missionary, not one of them, I don't think.
No, that's a full-on man's.
Yeah, it's a man's world. Yeah. 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 So, most women, if you're going to have sex missionary, will do some self-stimulating down there, right?
Will they?
Yeah.
While doing it?
While having sex? Yeah.
Missionary?
Yeah.
That seems hard. There's a man laying on top of you.
I mean, if you're like pressed right up against her, if you're literally laying like a dead fish on her and just humping your ass up and down, then yeah, it might be tough to slip a hand in there.
Christian men in these relationships are doing it.
Maybe that's the case. But if you're doing it where you provide a little space there for the Holy Spirit between you, then you can slip a hand down there.
They used to say to kids at dances.
Dances, yeah. Yeah.
Use some space for the Holy Spirit.
Right, yeah. If you leave some space down there, then you can stimulate and it's totally normal and natural to do that, right?
Yes.
So what's interesting to me, though, is it seems to, like, she thinks you're not allowed to even do that.
Yeah, it's just you're not supposed to put your hand on your own vagina unless it's for
wiping,
hygienic purposes, and other various things that happen down there.
Right. And then retraining her body wasn't enough.
For me, it was like retraining my body, retraining like my thoughts even to be focused on there, like the here and now with my husband and enjoying our sexual intimacy rather than my mind going to the places it would before,
the lustful places
to experience
sexual
pleasure, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Kristen, it makes sense that you would have sexual thoughts about other people.
Like, right.
It just makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're in a marriage, it only makes sense that your mind is going to wander.
Yeah. And it doesn't hurt anybody.
No.
It doesn't mean anything.
It absolutely does.
Whatever gets you there.
Where you need to go.
Yeah. Yes. You can just not care.
I really feel like she's definitely probably a lesbian, right?
That's totally what I got out of that too. I kept thinking that, and I was like, I'm just being an asshole.
the way she talks about it makes it feel even more like
she's struggling with the thoughts themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really sad. But you can see how this can cause serious psychological damage.
Yes, absolutely. Where
you are denying your sincere desires and trying to force yourself into the desires other people say you should have.
Right.
And then,
how did you address this with your husband? Did you wait till you were married? So Zach and I actually did talk about it before we were married. So we were dating. We were almost engaged, I want to say.
As someone who was raised in this, I'm guessing one day she was like, so do you ever have sexual thoughts? And I bet they both really got off hard on talking about their struggles and how often they struggle thinking about each other and, how hard it is to wait, but how good it'll be one day.
Like Christian when they edging.
Can just, when they can just fuck each other senseless while honoring God,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
Which I think How to Fuck Each Other Senseless While Honoring God should be the title of their next YouTube video.
Definitely. Yeah. I would read that book even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They should make that into a book. Maybe we should make that into a book. I'm going to edit this out just in case we decide to do that.
So I think it is a good conversation to have before you're married, once your relationship is to a more serious place. I wouldn't recommend it like date three. Like, so, like, do you struggle with masturbation? Like, what's your journey? You know, I think there can be other questions you should answer. You just talk about early on, like other struggles, maybe like if you're addicted to porn, things like that should probably come out earlier than later. So you can figure out where you're each at. Those are, you know, pretty serious things.
Her voice hurts my teeth.
What's your journey?
Yeah. Do you struggle with masturbation?
What's your journey?
Did you hear the change, though, when she started talking about porn?
Maybe like if you're addicted to porn, things like that should probably come out earlier than later so you can figure out where you're each at. Those are, you know, pretty serious things.
Zach likes porn, I think.
Yeah.
I bet Zach likes porn.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
He's a dude. I mean, he's a human.
Yeah, you know? Women...
There's plenty of women who love porn.
Women, there are lots of women love porn.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous that men think they're the only ones who watch porn.
I know, and that lasted for so long.
I know.
Just that subtle change in her voice when she's
if you're addicted
porn.
To porn.
Porn.
Then maybe that should come out sooner rather than later.
So you can just dump that guy.
Zach.
And maybe the guy should be honest about it.
Maybe when we talked about whether you masturbate or not, a porn addiction would have been a really good thing to mention to me. Especially when you like the really expensive paid ones.
Of dudes.
Why is it so pleasurable if religion forbids it, right? That's an interesting question because one, masturbation, religion, like these are words we would need to define a lot more. Like...
Oh, and I do have a clip here that somehow got moved. This was supposed to be at the beginning of the video. Let's see what it says.
And the definition that I gave in the book that I'm just going to give right now because it's so basic, to stimulate one's own genitals for sexual pleasure. So there you have it.
Oh, good. She has a definition for masturbation. That so she must just be struggling with the definition for religion. I'm pretty sure they mean Christianity, specifically Christians. Why do Christians forbid it?
Well, okay, listen. We're talking about Christianity, but it's not just Christianity that forbids it.
No, but that's who this person is talking right. about. That's the only reason why you would write into Kristen.
Yeah. Is Kristen.
Kristen is to talk about Christianity.
God is for sexual pleasure.
God is ribbed for her pleasure.
He is the designer. He is the author. He is the creator of sexual pleasure, and he has a good and beautiful plan. I mean, how amazing that the way that a married, you know, that two people bring a child into the world is through the act of sexual pleasure, sexual intimacy. Like that is God's design, his intention for even how children are brought into the world. Like how amazing that God intentionally made it so pleasurable, so beautiful. And obviously sin has broken so much of that.
So this is like a big thing with them is if Eve had never sinned, then we would still, you know, one man, one woman, they'd be having sex and they'd be making children and everything. And everything would be perfect. But sin broke that, you know. That's what the natural state would be that. But sin broke that. And now we have perversion and masturbation and stuff like that. Nobody would have masturbated if Eve hadn't just left that fruit alone, you know. It's a weird thing for them that sin breaks God's greater plan. Instead of them just recognizing, like, your idea is not the actual natural state of being.
Right. You know? I mean, you can just look to the animal world to prove that to be the case.
Yeah. Fucking dogs lick their own balls all the time.
Yes. Monkeys masturbate. There are plenty of animals that have sex for pleasure, not just for procreation.
Right. I just want to give a heads up that things start getting weird here.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
We don't have to be passively spinning around and or feeling like God is a killjoy. Like, oh, why does religion forbid something pleasurable? God is actually for our pleasure. He created it. It is awesome. What a gift he's given to humanity, sexual pleasure, but within the right context, for the right reasons, in celebration of something bigger than ourselves, of marriage, which ultimately, the most amazing, glorious part about all of this is that marriage between a man and a woman, that covenant is ultimately a reflection of Christ's relationship with the church, Christ with his people, and that sexual act, that intimate act, the word yada is used in scripture, which means a deep knowing, is the same word that God uses many times when talking about his children, that he knows us, he yada's us.
Yeah. So there's a lot to unpack there.
So a marriage between a man and a woman is meant to mirror or represent, or I don't know,
reflect
God's relationship with his children.
Yes. Yeah, I know. It gets weirder.
Like, so he gave us sexual pleasure so that we would get married.
Yeah.
And have the marriage relationship between a man and a woman, she's very clear, is the same as God's relationship with his
children. Who are us.
Who is us.
And Jesus and the church.
Yes.
As well.
Lots of people in that relationship.
Yeah.
And he yadas us.
Yadas us.
Yada.
So yada is used a lot in the Old Testament to mean sex, but it's also used in Genesis 8:11 after the flood, when it says that Noah knew the waters had receded. It's also used in Genesis 25, verse 27, when it says that Esau, you remember Esau? Yeah, Jacob's brother.
Yep.
Became a skillful hunter. Skillful was yadah.
Okay.
So it's got a broad meaning to it, right? Pretty interesting then that Kristen here, as well as a whole bunch of people like her, really hone in on this one interpretation of that word to mean that it's like a sexual thing between us and God.
Right.
Is really what kind of comes through with this.
That intimate act reminds us that we as humans were made for intimacy. We were made for an intimate spiritual relationship with our Heavenly Father. And there is nothing on this earth that can satisfy us more and give us more peace, more purpose, more fulfillment than our relationship with our Creator.
You know what does? Masturbation.
Yeah. As somebody who has been deeply into Christianity, masturbation was way better.
Well, and it's interesting because she talks about having the relationship with God and how that's supposed to be fulfilling and meaningful and fill you with all of your urges.
Yeah. Right? Everything you need filled.
Is filled with God.
Yeah.
To make you feel good.
Right.
But you can't masturbate because it makes you feel good.
Right.
So why would you do all this stuff to make yourself feel good? It's still selfish.
Shouldn't that be masturbation?
It's
spiritual masturbation.
Masturbation now technically means, obviously, masturbation. Touching one's own genitals till completion.
Right.
In a sexual manner. Masturbation can be used in other ways.
Getting really into your own physical fitness to bulk up or whatever is masturbatory. Right. Yeah.
When a lot of times you'll hear it said about artists who are really into themselves as their subjects, right?
Yeah.
Their works will be called masturbatory.
Right.
So really, masturbatory is just doing something for yourself for your own pleasure.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of her relationship with God.
Right. It's for her own pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the fuck's the difference?
Yeah. Well, it's also for God's pleasure, though.
I think apparently. Both of them are for God.
It sounds like it.
I see.
Because it really, like, she's talking about this, it really sounds like she's saying God made us to have sex with us. And and it really sounds like she's got this sexual fantasy that might even be subconscious about intimacy with her Heavenly Father.
Right.
You know, you read my fucking thing earlier.
Yeah.
It sounds weird, but there is something to that where, like, I'm like, daddy.
Yeah. Dear God, dear daddy.
Yeah. It has a whole nother connotation, doesn't it?
And how you love writing him.
Yeah.
And that you want him to keep helping you write to him for his glory.
Yeah.
Not yours.
I probably said something about wanting him inside me.
Not on this page, but I'm sure at some point
somewhere in there, I probably told him how much I want them.
I'm sure.
It's a weird thing. Like, and that's the thing is, like, most Christians don't even realize that they're doing it, but there's a real issue with Christians fetishizing God.
Right.
And I'm not going to fetish shame, but she's pushing this on fucking kids with this YouTube channel and all of her bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
That's the stuff that's really bad is like, it's fine if that's what you're into. I'm not going to kink shame or anything like that. If that's what you're into, go for it. But don't push this on, you know, kids who are like, don't put your bullshit on other people, basically.
Yeah, right. I mean, my whole thing with sex and sexual freedom and sexuality and being open is your sexual wants and needs shouldn't harm somebody else. If your sexual wants and needs harm somebody else, then don't do those things. But if all of your sexual wants and desires and pleasures are just for you and you alone, or you and whoever is consensually sharing it with you, then do as you please.
Yeah.
And it sounds to me like God is a very consenting partner.
Right. Yeah.
Based on what all of these people say constantly.
And that's ultimately what I believe and what many Christians believe, that sex should drive us toward going, okay, there's something more. This isn't the end all be all. There is something more that I was made for. And it's to be intimately known and loved by my creator, and for me to intimately know him and worship him with my whole life. And when I do that, that is when I will be truly fully satisfied. So God is for it. God is for
your, for your sexual want for
he
him.
Is for
he
it.
Is for it.
He is for it. Oh, he's for it.
Ew.
Yeah.
That was gross.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like she's not trying to do it, but there's something there behind all of that that she's denying about herself.
Oh yeah, sure. Of course she is.
Anyway, and that's pretty much it. She, of course, plugs the book again, but that's the video.
So damaging.
Yeah.
It really is. That message is just so damaging. And so many mental problems and post-traumatic stress and all that stuff is related to being made to feel extreme shame over what is essentially natural desires. And it can really, really, really fuck people up bad. I mean, you can tie back several serial killers to very strict, shame-filled upbringings.
Yeah, yeah.
Real fucked up.
I know.
So what this woman is doing is, it's so terrible. It's so terrible. And people are paying her to do it. That's the fucked up part.
Yeah.
People are buying into it. People are like, oh, yes, she says what I believe.
Why would you pay $80 to have her mentor you?
Oh, my God.
I can't remember if it was $80 or $50, but it's like an 8-week course.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Oh, thanks.
And what is she going to teach you? Marketing techniques?
Sounds like a pyramid scheme.
It really does. Yeah.
With God at the top.
Yeah. And her as the placeholder for God, because he's hard to get in touch with.
Yeah. She's a modern day.
Always out of the office.
Priests or whatever. Yeah. I mean, it is a ministry, right? Isn't that the whole thing?
That's what she called it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the girl defined ministries.
Yeah.
Only other thing we have.
Can you imagine being such a shitty parent that you can't even bring yourself to have those discussions, those warped, terrible, shame-filled discussions with your own child? You sit them down in front of this video.
Oh.
And you're like, watch this. And then this bitch is the one that's telling your kid what to do.
Yeah. Like if you caught your daughter masturbating, not you, but like in one of these religious. Yeah. And your response is to sit her down in front of this.
Or not even caught them masturbating. You just don't want to talk to your child about that subject. There are some parents who don't even want to go into that subject with their children.
Yeah.
And so
they're actually afraid of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents gave me books, so maybe a similar thing, right? Yeah.
If you had questions, I'm sure you could have talked to them about it. But you were very self-reliant.
Yes. And the books they gave me were very thorough.
Yeah.
At least take responsibility for your fucking own children.
Yeah.
If this is the message you want them to learn, don't let these people do it for you. You take that responsibility and own this on yourself. Instead, we've created a whole industry around it with lots of money.
Tons of money.
Very, very Christian to be making all that money off of teaching other women how to be God honoring.
Yeah. And we have to point out too, like this was a big thing in the 90s, you know, when I was coming up and stuff, purity culture and everything, 90s, early 2000s.
Oh my gosh, even in public schools, right? Yeah. They would do the oh God, what did they call it? The you got the little cards.
Oh, the pledge, the abstinence pledge, yeah, or something like, mm-hmm, that. Yeah. Well, the Jonas Brothers were a big one for that, because, yep, they had the I can't remember, the rings.
The purity rings.
Yeah. And stuff like that. I remember reading the book, I Kissed Dating Goodbye, by, I think his name was Joshua Harris, back in the day. And it was a book that was all about courtship. I think you and I might have talked about this at some point, but it was all about, instead of dating, you know, you court, which was a whole thing about having a chaperone, if I remember right. I can't remember all the details of it, but it was something like, you know, it's a longer process. You have like chaperones and stuff like that. You really don't touch each other hardly at all. I think maybe you could hold hands or something like that. And it's like, it was a very different process. Like, he really rose to fame. He had a whole nother book about marriage after that. And because him and his wife got married after courting and all that stuff. And was like a young wunderkind.
Wunderkind.
You know? Yeah. In the Christian circles. But then now he's an atheist, and he has since apologized profusely for those books because of all the damage they have done to people, all the divorces that were caused because people got into marriages that they shouldn't have gotten into. Right. They weren't ready for it. They didn't know what to look for.
Because they just wanted to have sex.
Yeah, ultimately.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to Cornerstone when I was, you know, 18 years old, and within the first few weeks, all of these people were fucking pairing up with people they ended up getting married to.
Right.
It was weird to see everybody just instantly pair up.
Right. Like, well, that's the only reason I was like,
did I miss a fucking memo? Like, I didn't know we were supposed to just cling to somebody like a fucking last life raft on a Titanic, you know, like. But then they got married, and I don't know how many of those marriages have lasted, but I can't imagine it's a lot of them.
Right.
Purity culture, though, is very bad.
It's bad. I mean, all of that stuff. Again, all of that stuff is damaging. Abstinence is not helpful.
No.
It's just teaching abstinence. Not a good tool. I know for a hot minute there, it felt like the teenage pregnancy rate was really going crazy, right? I mean, I felt like in the 90s, that was like something they talked about all the time was
Teenage pregnancy.
And then
there's the MTV show.
Yeah. Teen moms and stuff like that. Teaching abstinence doesn't solve that problem, though. No, Teaching safe sex.
Banning abortion solves it. No, it doesn't.
I was going through that in my head. I'm like, nope, I think that doesn't help. No, it doesn't.
It's going to make it worse.
letting 16-year-olds get on birth control, teaching boys how to use condoms, making that stuff readily available to them, is the way to solve that problem.
Yes.
100%.
Right. Education.
Yeah. And tell girls that boys' penises are gross. Just kidding. They are, though.
Just be prepared for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And really buckle down.
It's not like vaginas are great.
I know. That's the crazy thing is, like, sex is so great, but also the sex part's not that great. No,
that's the thing, though, is like, that's why God made it sex feel so good.
Right, because nobody wants a penis or a vagina.
Nobody wants a fucking kid either.
Right.
But you really want to fuck, you know?
Yeah.
It's the only thing that gets you past the whole having to have a kid.
These people really want to have kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pass that shit along. I always hope, I have hope for humanity, that we're not that still drawn in to that culture. But clearly we are.
Yeah.
So it makes me upset that that is still a good chunk of the world.
But then you see stuff like the protests in Iran to not have to wear the hijab.
Mm-hmm.
You see,
they killed a woman for not wearing a hijab in Iran. That's why there's protests.
No, yeah. And which obviously is terrible. And it sucks that that's what it takes for
I think women should want. If they want to wear a hijab, they should be able to.
Yes, exactly.
And if they don't want to, they shouldn't fucking have to.
Right, exactly. It should be, you should be able to make a choice.
Women should be able to make a fucking choice.
Same thing here in the United States. You know, people are going out in droves to support abortion laws, like to secure rights for women. We are going in the right direction.
Yes.
It seems like we are, as a society, going in the right direction.
I hope so.
These
I thought that 20 years ago.
Yeah. You know, we're still better off than we were 20 years ago, with the exception of Roe. Like, which is a big exception.
Are we?
Which is a big exception, I will grant you. But hopefully it's a very temporary thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, hopefully it's just a matter of, like, you know, this was something that was probably inevitably going to happen, and we need to actually secure it.
Right.
You know?
It's proof that, and I hate to say this, but this is why. This is proof as to why white dudes, and we're going to get into a whole other topic here that we can cut out or whatever, white dudes have so much more privilege than everybody else. And I know everyone's tired of hearing about white dudes, white dudes, white dudes. But but the the point being is that women thought they were getting to a good place. So we stopped fighting so hard. And look what happened. You have to constantly keep fighting. Black people have to constantly keep fighting. Any religious minority has to constantly keep fighting. Gay people have to constantly keep fighting.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. And you guys, sorry, don't have to do that.
No, thankfully.
And so when there's, when guys are like, oh, poor white dudes, they're always the problem for everything.
Yeah.
Everything gets blamed on us. And it's like, well, yeah, you guys have the free time.
Yeah.
You're the ones causing all the mess.
Right.
And it's exhausting. And I don't even fight hard like other people do. There are people out there who are like constantly fighting.
Yeah.
And I'm tired. I can't imagine what those people are like. And then you got these bitches.
Just making it worse. So that they can sell mentorship courses.
So, coming up from Bible Stories for Atheists, do you want 5 quick tips on how to get the best orgasm of your life? Well, just send us $150 and we'll get that right over to you.
And make sure to buy our book, How to Fuck Each Other Senseless While Honoring God.
Soon to come out also on Audible, voiced by Chris Hemsworth.
Step one. Be Chris Hemsworth. Everything you do when you are Chris Hemsworth honors God. Everyone you do when you're a Chris Hemsworth honors God.
One of these days, somebody who listens to this podcast is going to know Chris Hemsworth, and he's going to be like, these weird people in Michigan talk about you an awful lot.
And it's always sexual.
I think they both have crushes on you.
I mean, if there was any dude. And they all live miserably ever after. Thank you so much for checking out our podcast. Help us share the good news by sending this to a friend or leaving a review to help others find us. Follow the show on Twitter at Bible Atheists, and we'll talk to you next time.
Overlap.